I'm glad you're joining me for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Let's pick up our story in Genesis chapter 34 today. We are talking about a very dramatic and very, very sad and gruesome story regarding Jacob and his family. Now, you remember he has had a really fast-growing family because he's married to two sisters, and because they couldn't always keep having babies, they got their handmaidens involved in it. And so in a matter of about 7 years, Jacob ends up with 11 boys and one girl. Then he works for another 6 years for his father-in-law before leaving under some very troublesome circumstances. But from that information, we have a pretty good understanding that when Jacob arrived back inside the boundaries of the Promised Land and put his cattle ranch down in the Jordan Valley and his sheep operations up at Shechem, that his oldest son was around 12 and his youngest son was around 6, thereabouts. And more than likely, his daughter that is named Dinah must have been right around 6 or 7, just slightly older than Joseph, which tells us that this story in chapter 34 must take place about 10 years later. We know that it precedes the story of Joseph, which takes place when he is 17. And so I think it happened about a year before that, when Joseph was 16 and Dinah was 17. And that makes good sense with her being a young lady, being interested in interaction with other young ladies in the region, and a boy coming into the story. Okay? Now, I want you to keep that in mind, but also keep in mind that I believe very strongly that some of our Bible teachers of the past, as much respect as I have for them, I think they blew it whenever they tried to turn this into the story of a rape. Because I do not believe, under any circumstances, that the context upholds the idea of a rape. I think what we are about to see is something all of us are quite familiar with, because every community has run into this. Every family, more than likely, has some element of maybe even their more distant relatives that have engaged in this very same story. And what is that? Teenagers that get ahead of the game and become sexually active before they ever get married. Okay, let's tell the story. Genesis 34, 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. So as I already said, Jacob and his tent city is located right next to the city of Shechem, which is located right between the shoulders of Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. And Dinah has this desire to interact with the young ladies of the land. Not surprising, right? If she's 17, she wants to see the latest fashions and find the latest news and whatever it else is going on in this community. And then this happens, verse 2. When Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, now remember the Hivites are a subgroup of Canaanites. And so Hamor is, for all practical purposes, the king of Shechem. He is the chief leader. Shechem itself is probably made up of only several hundred people. Remember, this is way back in time when the population of the world was much, much smaller. And so the whole population of the Middle East at this time was probably less than 50,000. So towns, cities, would have only been made up of several hundreds of people. So this guy is kind of the mayor of this city of Shechem. And his son is also named Shechem. Now, Shechem means shoulders, and probably the town had the name first because of the terrain. But Shechem gets named after the city, I think. So he is called the Prince of the Land. The word that is used here is that idea of a leadership in waiting. He is, for all practical purposes, the guy that will be in charge of this city after his father passes on or is too old to do things. Well, all of that's going to go out the window in a bit, as we will see. So when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her. Now, I told you when we were finishing this up last session that the word just simply means took. And the idea of seized has the implication of force, but that's not in the actual word. There are examples of rape in the scripture. And in addition to the word took, there is a modifier of by force. And you can see beyond a doubt, beyond a shadow of any doubt, that in those instances, it was a rape. Here, there is no modifier. And so it could simply be he took her by the hand or took her into his arms. And then he lay with her, which means they had sexual relations. And then another buzzword gets used, humiliated her. The word in Hebrew means humbled or treated in a lower fashion. And what is probably being communicated here is he had sexual relations with her outside the boundaries of marriage. They jumped the gun. They were involved in an illicit sexual relationship. And so it's teenagers getting ahead of themselves. Verse 3. Now we get to some of the wording that should help you understand the real story here. Verse 3. His soul was drawn to Dinah. It's the word of getting glued to, stuck to. It's actually the wording that's part of the marriage concept. A man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife. So he feels connected to her, and I have a feeling she felt the same way back toward him. So his soul was drawn toward Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman, and that is the typical word for love in the Old Testament, true love. In the Greek Old Testament, it is the word agape. Why is that important? Because agape is the special word for love in the Greek language. It's about commitment, wanting to hold on and work with this relationship. So all the vocabulary here is indicating that these two young people fell in love and then jumped the gun and were involved sexually, and that is going to cause the story to go sideways. So he loved the young woman, spoke tenderly to her. The literal wording here in the Hebrew is spoke to the heart of the girl. In Hebrew, as I've been trying to teach you, heart has got very little to do with emotion. It's all about choices. It's all about reasoning. In fact, in the New Testament, it's sometimes illustrated for people by adding the word mind, such as, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. So heart and mind go together in that passage. So he is not just simply appealing to her emotions. He is talking to her heart, probably talking about the future. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. You and I together are just something special. And so that's what's going on. And so Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, get me this girl for my wife. Now that's normal procedure. If only they'd done this earlier. The procedure is for the father, and sometimes the mother, of the man, the young man, to go to the father and the mother of the young lady and start arranging for a dowry agreement. Remember that that's payment of value that will represent a commitment that even if the man dies later, the wife will have financial support ready for her. So it's kind of like life insurance. Or if the husband somehow turns and mistreats her and there's a divorce, then there will be alimony in advance. So that's the whole idea of the dowry. So the parents of the young man go to the parents of the bride and start dowry arrangements so that a ceremony can happen and so that a marriage can take place over a period of time. Now, verse 5. Jacob heard that he had defiled or humbled his daughter Dinah. Now, I'm not exactly sure how this became known. There is a possibility that there might have been pregnancy involved in this. We all know that in some of those teenage love affairs, the way they get found out that they've jumped the gun is because there is a pregnancy. Now, the text doesn't talk about that here, so we can't be sure that's the way it happened. It could be as simple as the man, Hamor, kind of let it slip that they'd been intimate. And so that might have come into the conversation of the dowry, that these guys have already got ahead of the curve. Let's go ahead and just finish the preparations and get these kids married. So Jacob finds out that there's been sexual intimacy. Verse 5 continues, but his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. It's practice that is seen from time to time where the sons are brought into these contractual arrangements between families. Remember, marriage is very often families being connected to one another. So the heirs, the brothers of the young lady are often brought into the discussions. So Leah's brothers, if she's 17, then that means that the eldest one is about 24. So the others are in their 20s that are her full brothers. So Jacob lets them get involved in the discussion. Verse 6, Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel, or perhaps the wording should be to Israel, because remember, Israel, as we habitually think of it, is a nation, an ethnic group. But in this context, Israel is the father of the clan. And so in the more traditional way of thinking, this is before any type of sexual intimacy, the father of the daughter should have been approached. But he kind of got skipped over here. And so they're upset that procedure was not followed. By lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done. Now again, I want you to think about some of those circumstances that you know in your own life, in your own family, in your own circumstances or community, that sometimes big brothers get really upset when they find out that their baby sister has been sexually intimate with a young man. Now, the weirdness that we're all aware of is that sometimes those big brothers are themselves illicitly sexually intimate with other young ladies themselves. And there is a double standard that comes out of their attitudes here. It's okay for me to be sleeping with some young lady that I'm not married to, but for some young man to be sleeping with my baby sister, that's not right, and that needs to be punished. And that seems to be what's coming out in the attitude of these 20, early 20-year-old men, maybe a couple of them in their later teens. So Hamor, so the father is talking here. Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him to be his wife." So he's in love with her. Please give permission for these kids to get married. Verse 9, but it's not just that. "Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us." Dina is the only named daughter. There's presumably other daughters as well. "Give your daughters to us. Take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us. The land will be open to you. Dwell, trade in it, get property in it." So he's basically saying, let's make an alliance. You guys have been here for a little while. My estimation is they'd been probably at Shechem for 9 or 10 years when this event happens. So he's saying, make it more permanent. You marry into our families will marry into your families, we'll be all one big family. And then the young man speaks up. Now, I don't know how old he is. I'm guessing he's probably roughly around the same year, same age as Dina and her brothers. Upper teens, early 20s. "Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, 'Let me find favor in your eyes. Whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will, and I will give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife.'" So he says, "I don't care how much you say I have to pay or do to marry your daughter, your sister. She's worth it." See, that's the thrust of this story. This is not about a rape. This is about young love that got ahead of the story. And you remember that Jacob himself worked 7 full years in order to pay a dowry price to marry his true love. Well, here is apparently Shechem saying, "Whatever you say, sir, I'll do it because I want to get married to her." Now, verse number 13. The sons of Jacob, specifically Dinah's big brothers, okay, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, are the 4 oldest ones. So the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully, because he had defiled or humbled their sister Dinah. He had not followed procedure. He slept with her before they got married. That's what they're upset about. Verse 14, they said to them, We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you will become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. Then we'll give our daughters to you, and we'll take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we're going to take our daughter and we will be gone. So that's the brothers that pushed that through their father to Hamor and his son Shechem. This is the condition. We practice circumcision. You don't. So it would be inappropriate for marriages to take place between our peoples, unless, of course, you're willing to become circumcised as well. Now, it's interesting. This was clearly being practiced all the way up until the New Testament times. In the books of Josephus, he talks about how some of the daughters of Herod, excuse me, the granddaughters of Herod the Great, before they could marry non-Jews, those people, kings, most of them, had to be circumcised in order to marry the daughters of the great granddaughters of Herod the Great, because that was a Jewish family. So this was deceitfully used at this point, as we're about to find. Their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem. Thought that was great. That's worth it. The young man did not delay to do the thing because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. So he's willing to go through this ceremony in order to get married to her. It's worth it. So again, doesn't sound like a rape story, does it? Now he was the most honored of all his father's house. So he is highly respected as the future leader of Shechem. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city, the place where you do official things, spoke to the men of their city. Remember, I'm guessing the population is several hundreds of people, men, women, children. So the men of the city are bound to be the tens, 20s, 30s, 40s of people. And so they spoke to the men of their city saying, "These men are at peace with us. Let them dwell in the land, trade in it. For behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters as wives. Let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us to become one people, when every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, all their beasts be ours? Only let us agree with them, and they will dwell with us." So they present this to the city as a benefit. These guys are well-to-do. I mean, Jacob's tent city is monstrous. It's probably more populated than Shechem itself. And so they present it as, this guy is very wealthy. His family is very blessed by the gods, they would have thought in the plural. And we would benefit greatly by allying with them and them becoming part of our community permanently. And the only thing they ask of us is a little snip and a few days of pain, and everything will be great after that. It's worth it, guys. Let's do it. And so verse 24, and all those went out of the gate, all those who went out of the gate of his city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. Now again, in my mind, this is another good indicator. This is not a rape story. If this guy, this young teenage prince of the city, had raped this girl, why? Why would you want to be circumcised just so that he could then have a marriage ceremony with the woman he treated that way? It just wouldn't make sense. But if the guy is well-respected and he's clearly in love with her and the family that he's marrying into is going to be beneficial to the city now and into the future, yes, I would be willing to do that. It sounds like a good community investment. And so they did. And then we find out what the plot was. Verse 25, on the third day when they were sore. So they're not fully healed. They're kind of at the peak of the pain. And these guys would have known what that's going to be because they have sometimes adult men come into their community and they get circumcised. And so they have an idea of the progression of pain for the circumcision ceremony. So they wait until the peak moment that these guys are in pain. And two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, full brothers, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed all the males. So here is the city of Shechem. They believe that they're at peace with Tent City. They believe that they're engaging in a community unity ceremony. They're going to join together. They had no suspicion about this family whatsoever. And they went through the ceremony of circumcision. And then on day three, just two of these young men, probably 21, 22 years of age, come into their city and probably kill those that are on guard in the gate area. And then they proceed to go from house to house, killing all the men of the city, all the boys of the city that have been circumcised. Verse 26, they killed Hamor and his son Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. There is no other way to describe this, folks. This was premeditated murder by these two young men. And we'll come back next time and talk more about the fallout.